you, Glasgow. What's up? Yes. Great to be here in Glasgow. See, I can say that with sincerity. This has been a long tour, and there's been a few places where I've had to pretend it's great to be there, and they know it's not. You know, and you're in safe hands as well, ladies and gentlemen. You've come to see the right person. You know, there's been a lot of dispiriting talk lately about showbiz people in general and comedians in particular, and you've nothing to worry about. You can relax, safe in the knowledge. You've come to see somebody who has never been rich enough to ever cheat on his taxes and never been powerful enough to ever sexually harass anyone. Nothing to worry about in that regard. I'm not saying I'm a good person. I don't deserve any credit. I've just never had that kind of clout in the industry. That's all it is. No one ever lost their job by not showing me their hole. I don't have that kind of sway. But this is what I love doing the best. I love doing this, standing here talking to you, because I can say what I like when I'm doing this, right? Within reason, obviously, I have to make it funny. You know, if it's not funny, you let me know. I had the best heckle I've had in a long time when I was warming up for this tour, and it was from a Scottish bloke, and it was in a comedy club in London. I was getting ready to come on tour, God, over a year ago now, and I was standing on stage, a bit of paper in hand, trying out new bits, and I did this bit, and it didn't work. Relax, it's not in the show. It started kind of funny, it got less funny as it went on. Not the structure you want from a comedy routine. So, got the end, and it just fizzled out, and I got the best heckle I've had in a long time from the Scottish bloke right in the middle of the room who just went, "Is that gonna be in your show?" Fucking beautiful. It's like, because there was no malice whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? It was genuine concern. It was genuinely, you could feel it. It was cutting, but at the same time, it was from a good place. It was like, "Don't do it, son, they'll fucking kill you." I was on that Sunday brunch last year, plugging this tour. I was on that chat show, and I was on with, amongst other people, Caroline Flack was a guest, host of Love Island. It's a very popular show. But is love really the right word for what went on that island, do you think? I think it's a bit of a stretch. I appreciate they can't call it Fuck Soup Island, but still. Love just seems a bit of an exaggeration for the feelings involved. Anyway, I'm on the show with Caroline Flack, as a lovely woman, and I've no wish to offend her, but right in front of her, right in front of the host of Love Island, the host of Sunday Brunch asked me, "Ed, do you watch Love Island?" So I didn't want to lie just to be polite and then get caught out. You know, I didn't want to go, "Yeah," and have them go, "Oh, really? And who's your favourite arsehole?" Is there a Wayne? What if I say Wayne? Is that a good guess? Tell me he's not the racist one. Is that? So instead, I just went, "No. No, I don't watch Love Island." That's all I said. That's all I could say. Which is a shame, because what I wanted to say was, "Well, I watched one episode, and now I'm afraid my television has chlamydia." But you can't say that. Can't say that on Channel 4 on a Sunday morning, apparently. Times have changed. Anyway, it's all worth it to, you know, to just do all these interviews that you know that the show's on, so you'll come see. Because it's exciting. It's exciting being on the road. You never know what snacks you're going to get from the venue. I said, yes, it's all about the snacks. I buy my own beer, generally. I don't expect them to cater to my every whim when it comes to beer. Who knows what I'll fancy? But I ask for snacks, and I deliberately keep it vague just to make it exciting. These are my demands. These are what I ask for. These are the ways in which I am the sort of spoiled artiste. And folks, this is the theme of the show. I don't know if you saw the poster there. It's called Spoiler Alert. I called it that because I worry about how spoiled we are as individuals, as a society as well. But I'll be expanding on that over the course of the evening. But I worry that I'm contributing to this because I have two small boys and I am currently in the process of spoiling the shit out of them. We've two kids, and we're spoiling. Look, I'm just trying to give my children the life I never had. That's your goal as a parent, to give your children the life you never had. And I'm lucky. I'm lucky because I earn more money than my parents did. And thank you for your help in that. So far, so good. My kids are having the life I never had. They go to a nicer school than I went to. They have more toys than I ever had. I own my own home. They never fucking will. It's all going according to plan. But I am raising two posh English boys. That's what lives in my house with me. Two posh English boys. And here's the thing. I hear my own sons talk. I hear the voices. I hear the noise that comes out of the front of my son's heads. And I just think, you do not sound like somebody I would have hung out with when I was your age. That's as diplomatically as I can put this. I just hear their voices. And when they demand things from me in their little Lord Fauntleroy accents, it's all I have in me not to hate my own children. It's terrible. They talk to me like I'm the hired fucking help. Seriously. You get that. And it's not even when they demand stuff that didn't exist when I was their age. I'm not one of those. Oh, we didn't have that in my day. I don't mind that. I'm fine when they want to have a go on the iPad. Yes, certainly. Take this window into the world's entire repository of knowledge and use it to make fart noises. On you go. Or when they want to watch any one of the different hundreds of channels of programming devoted to their demographic that are available whenever they want. Do you remember when, if you wanted to watch something, you had to wait for it to be on? Remember that? My children have no concept of that notion. But good for them. That's progress. We're living in the future and they get to reap that benefit. But no, my problem is when they ask for stuff that existed when I was their age, but I'd never heard of it. That's when I resent them. When they say things like, Daddy, is there any more elderflower cordial? Who told you about that? How did you find it? I was 27 the first time I tried elderflower cordial. I was at a wedding of two recovering alcoholics. That's how I found out about that stuff. You seem to think it comes out of the taps. What's for tea tonight, Daddy? I hope it's tagliatelle and pesto. That's my favourite. Fucking hate you. How do you... When I was your age, I'd heard of spaghetti and bolognese. That was it. That was my world of Italian cuisine. I'd heard a rumour of something called lasagna. That's all. I still don't like pesto. I'm 46. How do you have a more sophisticated palate than me? I watched you eat your own shit not 5 years ago. And now you're sitting there demanding pesto like Heston Blumenthal with more hair. You probably want the aubergine pesto as well, which I didn't even know existed until fucking yesterday. They're so posh. I swear, my 7-year-old's just one step away from going, Daddy, I'm going out to play. Where are my cufflinks? No, I don't want the London bus cufflinks. I want the quotation mark cufflinks. I want it to seem like everything I'm saying is slightly ironic. Who are you? Who owns you? We have a trampoline in our back garden. Because it's the law. Seriously, social services to fly a drone over your back garden. If there's no trampoline, they can take the children away. It's true. Watch out for that. But we have a trampoline. But our trampoline, ladies and gentlemen, is the biggest trampoline I've ever seen in my life. I sound like I'm showing off, and I'm not. I'm ashamed of how big our trampoline is. It's bigger than my first flat. Seriously. And my children will get on this monstrosity, and they'll bounce on it for maybe 2 minutes, and then they'll lie on it and go, Daddy, bounce us. You can bounce your fucking selves, little man. Daddy did not pay good money for a trampoline, so he'd have to do the bouncing. You bounce. Daddy didn't have a trampoline when he was your age. No, do you know what Daddy's trampoline was called? It was called his bed. Yeah. And Daddy had the bottom bunk, so... But Daddy still bounced on his bed. Oh, Daddy loved bouncing on his bed. In fact, Daddy bounced on his bed so much, he broke his bed. That's right, Daddy broke his bed. But then Daddy couldn't tell his daddy. No, because my daddy isn't as cool as your daddy. Oh, I know Granddad Eddie seems like a lot of fun now. That wasn't always the case. No. Quite the taskmaster in his younger days, yeah. So your daddy didn't want to tell his daddy that he'd broken his bed, so your daddy spent about a year of his life sleeping in a fucking satellite dish. Yeah. Does that sound fun? Good. Yeah. Does that surprise you about Granddad Eddie? Does it? Okay, I tell you what, you love Granddad Eddie so much, tonight, why don't we go out Granddad Eddie style? Will we? Shall we party like it's 1979? Huh? Who's up for a night out like I had when I was your age? Who's up for sitting in the car outside the pub, drinking lemonade and eating crisps. Huh? Who's up for that? Well, I sit in the pub, getting leathered. And then, because it's the 70s, I come out and drive you home. Fucking bounce us. And that might surprise some of the younger people. There's one. That might surprise some of the younger people to know that this is what went on in the 70s. Look, my dad wasn't even a bad dad by 70s standards. He was standard. Yeah, that was just how things were, where he was from at that time of life. I bear him no ill will. I hold no grudges against my dad. I love the man very much. And look, I love hanging out with my kids. I love being a dad. It's just, when I look at the amount of parenting I'm expected to do versus the amount of parenting I myself received, I feel a bit fucking short-changed, if I'm honest with you. Something's not quite adding up here. At 5 and 7, I could leave my children in a field full of nettles tomorrow and never see them again. I've already done more parenting than my dad did his entire fucking life. Seriously. But we swung too far the other way. We've gone crazy with it. Not last year, the year before. December 2016, just before Christmas, we took our children to Lapland to visit Santa Claus. Yeah. You know the guy we made up? Yeah. You know that not real person we invented to take credit for the shit we buy our kids? Well, we got on a plane and flew to another country to visit a fictional character. I can never make fun of people for going to Lourdes ever again. We spent... We spent the price of a decent skiing holiday going on a wild goose chase to northern Finland. And yes, that's right, I did just say that. The price of a decent skiing holiday, yes. That's how I put things in financial perspective nowadays. Do not begrudge me that, ladies and gentlemen. I have come far. I spent 3 months of my life living in Postle Park. That's a fucking fact. Yeah. You fucking look at me like I haven't seen shit. £10.50 a week, that apartment was, yeah. I remember... It was back when I was working, I was a student at Strathclyde Uni, and I remember being in the bar in the student union, and the guy, Graham, who worked at the games room bar, he says, "Ooh, still living in Postle?" And I said, "Postle Park." "It's not Postle, it's Postle Park." And I swear he goes, "Oh, excuse me, it's no Alcatraz, it's Alcatraz Penitentiary." I remember when I was a struggling open micer on the comedy circuit in London, you know, just like everything was in terms of how many pints would that buy me. I could get that jacket or I could get drunk. This is a tricky one. That was how things were. And now it's, that could have been a skiing holiday. Yes. Yes. We're that middle class in our family. We nearly bought an Aga. Nearly. We didn't buy an Aga. There was two reasons why we didn't buy an Aga. One, how I pronounced the word Aga. That put my wife right off. That did. She was like... My English wife was most perturbed by that pronunciation. Maybe we could get an Aga. Yeah, we could get an Aga. No, not if you're going to say it like that. Nothing will taste good coming out of it if you're going to pronounce it like that, you flat-vowelled Mick. She didn't say that out loud, but those words were on her face. It was written in her eyes, those words. That's how I put my wife off anything I don't want to do. I just say it in an irritating way. "Yes, darling, I'll give you a sensual massage." No, change your mind, no. Put away the oil, don't touch me. "Ooh, somebody seems to be in the mood to engage in coitus." No, not anymore, didn't think so. That's one reason we didn't get an Aga. The other reason we didn't get an Aga is because they're fucking stupid things. An oven that wants to heat your house. No. And people have got Agas. They fucking love them, don't they? Stand around, "Ooh, lovely bit of heat coming off that oven." Then your oven's broken. It's supposed to keep the heat inside and use it for the food. What's that? There's no food in the oven? Then why is it fucking on? Seriously, I would no more heat my room with my oven than I would cool my room down with my fridge. Ridiculous waste of energy. I'm glad you're laughing. This shit did not go down well in Harrogate. Man, took me life in me hands there. Of all the places to do me I Hate Aga routines, to do it that close to an Aga showroom was really quite something. People don't think of me as a dangerous comic, but... I'm nothing against people who own Agas. My in-laws, they have an Aga, you know, and they're lovely people. They live in Derbyshire. Yeah, they live in the Peak District in Derbyshire, and they're farmers, and they're proper rural types, and they have an Aga. But I'd be sitting in their kitchen going, fuck, it's roasting in here. Can we turn the heating down? We can, but then there's no dinner. Takes a few days to cool down anyway. Another few days to warm back up again. Yeah, we turn it off in the summer, just eat salad for 3 months. Well, this seems like a fucking stupid oven then. How much does a stupid oven cost you? About the price of a skiing holiday, if I'm honest. They're not cheap. Certainly paying for the inconvenience. And they're drying their washing on it. On their oven. What kind of broke-ass Walton's carry-on is that? Drying your laundry on your fucking oven. Did you put it through the mangle first? What fucking year is this? Have you just dragged it up from the river where you've been bashing it off the fucking rocks? I've always thought of the Aga as a middle-class status symbol, a thing posh people have. They're drying their laundry on their oven like some gypsy family. Sitting there in the in-laws' kitchen with the kids. Yeah, kids, I'll make you an omelette, but first I just have to move granddad's pants. So we didn't get one of those. But we did spend our money, just as unwisely, going on a trip for 2 nights and 3 days to northern Finland to find Santa Claus. And we're running around after all these actors pretending to be elves, leading us on all these little mini adventures to find clues to where Santa Claus was. It was fucking awesome. It was great. Seriously. They never broke character once. They were brilliant. Oscar performance, every single one. By the end of the second day, I'm so caught up in it, I'm turning to my wife going, God, I hope we're going to get to meet Santa Claus. She's like, are you a fucking idiot, are you? We're meeting Santa Claus. That is happening. We have paid to meet Santa Claus. It's a dead cert. Woohoo! And on the second night, Mrs. Claus came to the hotel room and read the kids a bedtime story. Who knew Mrs. Claus was a Scouser? I didn't know that. Yeah. And then on the third day, on the way to the airport, we met him, we found him, we tracked him down. He was at his workshop. Should have looked there in the first place, could have saved a fortune. He was really good. Best Santa Claus ever seen in my entire life, both as a child or as an adult. He was fantastic. The beard looked real. He was the right level of fat. He didn't stink of fags. He was just proper. And he's been teed up with information. He knows what the kids like. They like Ninjago. They like Transformers. He's across all of that. And he just, look, I just wanted to be the most amazing moment of their young lives. Well, they're still in that fragile thing where they're old enough to understand what's going on, but they're still young enough to believe in magic. I just wanted it to just blow them away. So as we're leaving, I go, wow, how cool was that? We got to meet Santa Claus. And the two of them were just like, me. That's not enough. I'm sorry. No, I paid for more than that. This is not... I know you don't appreciate how much this all cost, but we've been running around in the snow now for 72 hours and not a fucking ski was put on. So, I'm going to ask you again, and this time I want to see a bit more fucking wonder in your beautiful little faces. Because we got to meet Santa Claus, the man himself. How awesome is that? And the two of them are just like, yeah, but we met him last year at Westfield Shopping Centre. Like, what do you do? What do you do? You can't disavow them of that notion. You can't go, no, you didn't, can you? You can't go, no, you didn't. Oh, no, that wasn't the real Santa Claus. That man whose knee I sat you on was a liar. And I knew the whole time that was the real Santa Claus, not that charlatan at Westfield. What would the real Santa Claus be doing? dicking around Westfield Shopping Centre at his busiest time of the year? Fucking think. Can't say that. You can't talk that way to a child that age. You traumatise them. You have to keep that anger inside. Let it turn into an ulcer, which you then name after your children. They are funny, though. I know I'm slagging them, but I'm exaggerating my anger for comedic effect. They're very funny, and I love them very much. You know, I'm very fond of them. But they... we're keeping them. Can't say fairer than that. They are funny, though. They're both funny in their own ways. Like my younger son, for instance. My younger son, Magnus. That's my younger son's name, Magnus. Which, by the way, got me a massive round of applause when I played a comedy club in Reykjavik last year. Seriously, that was the easiest round of applause I've ever gotten in my life, was performing in Iceland and going, my son Magnus, oh my God, that's one of our names! Like, they went out, I came back after the interval, they handed me an axe that he had smelted in the car park. For your son Magnus to smite his enemies. But he's, Magnus has an innate sense of comic timing. That's the great thing about him. I like to think I can spot that in a person. And I spotted him in early. He knows exactly how to time a line to get maximum effect. I remember one time we were sitting at home. He was 4 years of age, and he was in a bit of a mope. He just seemed unhappy. And I said to him, what's wrong with you? What ails you, little man? And he goes, I wish I was a grown-up. And I said, well, you know, when you're a grown-up, you'll have to go to work. And he just paused the perfect length of time, an exact sitcom beat, and then went, I wish I was a comedian. Oh, I see, always like that, is it? Because daddy doesn't work, does he? No, you try playing fucking Hove. You tell me I don't work. That trampoline didn't just materialize out of nowhere, you ingrate. If he's not going to be a comedian, at the very least, we know he'll be a very accomplished heckler. I can see that in him. Not just from the way he talks to me. I've seen him heckle. I took the kids to a show once at the Edinburgh Fringe. I took them to a show called The Amazing Bubble Man. Have you ever seen The Amazing Bubble Man? No? He blows bubbles for an hour. I know, it sounds shit. It's actually really good. Honestly, it is. I know you're dubious. You're all like, are you sure you didn't just watch somebody have a seizure? No, honestly. It's a really good show. He puts kids in bubbles, he uses lighting effects, smoke, helium, all kinds of stuff. He's amazing, and he blows bubbles, and he's a man. There's not a lie on the poster. But about 10 minutes into the show, he's trying to get a bit of audience call and response happening, a bit of panto-style interaction on the go. So he goes, hands up here, who loves bubbles? And everybody puts their hands up, obviously. Because if they hadn't, they'd have been in the wrong place, wouldn't they? So everybody puts their hands up, and then he goes, well, I love bubbles more than any of you. Oh, yes, I do. And all the kids go, oh, no, you don't. Did I say all the kids? All the kids except for one of the ones I brought with me, who yells out from the sixth row, of course you do, you're the bubble man. And then I swear he's looking at me like, what's this dickhead's problem, Dad? Why is he trying to start shit? And I was like, you know what, son? I don't approve of heckling, but you just cut through some bullshit right there. Fair play. Don't be looking at him like that, bubble man. He's on your side. The rest of them are fucking arguing with you. I saw him reduce a man to near tears at London Zoo, of all places. We took him to the zoo once, and while we were there, there was a man giving a talk on the giant African land snail. So we took them to that, because why should the whole day be fun? Kids have got to learn, you know? But it was actually turned out to be really cool because the guy has one in his hand. He's got a giant African land snail and it's right there in his hand that the kids can all stare at. And it's a freaky looking creature. They're all transfixed by it because it's a snail, but it's giant, as the name would suggest. It's also African and land-based. Nobody gave a fuck about either of those things. They're all just staring at the giant snail. And the guy is spitting out interesting giant African land snail facts. Dropping some giant African land snail knowledge on the crowd there gathered. Well, everybody stared at the snail, apart from, again, after a while, my son Magnus, who just starts staring at the guy giving the talk. And he's getting closer to his face. And you can see the guy looking out of the corner of his eye as if to say, the fuck is this kid's problem? This is not where the action is, son. It's all happening here. I don't know what you're looking at me for. And then suddenly, mid-fact, Magnus just cut across him and went, you know a lot about snails. And like, not even in a nice way. You know what I mean? There was no respect. It was more accusatory, if anything. It wasn't like, well done, you really boned up on your subject here, mister. It was more like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What's with the snails, you fucking weirdo? Zoo full of animals, you pick snails. Have you heard about cheetahs? They're fast. And you could just see the guy just crumble inwardly, just go, I've wasted my life. I've absolutely wasted my life. Even the small boy can see what a pointless exercise this is. Mother was right about me all along. Seriously, he's a very annoying, he's a very infuriating little person. Honestly, I nearly let him touch an electric fence once because he was pissing me off that much. That's true. That's a fact. That is a terrible admission, but that happened. Let me explain. Some of you are like, nope, I don't think we want to know. I think if you give us any more information, we'll become accessories after the fact. I think the less we know, the better. I didn't just nearly let him touch that electric fence. I actively encouraged it. Seriously. Like, go on, touch it, fucking touch it, go on. Which really brought me back to the night he was conceived. Anyway, here's what happened. Here's what happened. We were out walking. We're in the Peak District, near where we've been staying with the in-laws, and then we went out for a walk to get away from the heat of the Yaga. And we're walking on the nice, gentle, undulating hills of the Peak District. Perfect level of hill walking to get the kids started before they graduate to the more serious shit y'all got up here, you know? Because I'm trying to get the kids into hill walking, partly because it's good for them, also because I like it, and that's a selfish dad move. Come on, I like this, so must you. I love it. I love the hill walking. The whole outdoors thing, hill walking, camping, canoeing, all that shit. I love the outdoors. And for a brief shining moment last year, ladies and gentlemen, I was considered an outdoors hero. It was, as the fella says, just for one day. And it was mainly only online. But what happened was I was up in the Cairngorms doing some hiking, doing some Munro bagging. That's what I do. That's my thing. That's my thing. The Scottish Highlands are honestly, favourite place to be on the planet. I'm into the Munros. I'm sure you know, but for those of you who don't, the Munros are the Scottish mountains above 3,000 feet, right? There's 282 of them. I'm trying to tick them all off. I've done 97 so far have passed under these feet. Not bad for someone who lives in Essex. Yeah, you can clap, but I know it's all just a trick Scotland is playing on the likes of me. Because 3,000 feet also happens to be the height at which Scottish clouds just fucking sits. Yeah. If you like walking all day and seeing nothing at the end of it, it's the hobby for you. It's like, Scottish people are like, oh, did you have a nice walk? What did you see? Fucking nothing. We were at ground level, we had a lovely view. Oh, you enjoy yourself in the clouds, you prick. But I did, it was great. And it was in the Cairngorms, as I say. We spent two days and one night sleeping in a bothy and did, you know, climbed like three Munros, and then we're hiking out, me and this other outdoors writer. And we meet another guy, and he's hiking his way into the wilderness, and he's got himself in trouble. Right? He's on his way to stay at the same bothy we've just come from, but he's sunk through the snow because he's carrying a pack and it's too heavy, and he's sunk through the snow and he's sort of fallen in a way that's twisted his knee. Turns out afterwards what had happened to him was he'd torn all the ligaments in his left knee. Yeah. So he's in a bad way. So we have to help him. We have no choice but to help him because he recognized me. Otherwise, he'd still be there. Honestly, I couldn't be arsed. I was knackered. And then I realized afterwards, he only half recognized me. I could have gotten away with it. He did that thing of going, wait, I know you from somewhere, don't I? And I could have said, yes, I'm Sue Perkins, and just left his arse there. But no. Have to go being a hero. So what I did was, I swapped packs with them. It was really no more than that. I gave him my pack. My pack's empty now. I've burnt all my fuel in the bothy fire. I've eaten all my food. And I can't pack quite light anyway. So I give him my pack. I take his pack. And as soon as I shouldered, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are we taking some dark matter for a stroll, are we, Chief? It was stupid heavy. And again, I didn't realize until after we dropped him off and we gave him his pack and he's taking stuff out. He's carrying shit like, he's carrying a bag of coal to burn in the bothy fire for himself rather than just carrying an extra jumper. He's carrying 4 litres of water. It's important to carry water when you're going for a hike, but 4 litres to camp next to a stream in the fucking snow. The snow, dude. You know what happens to this shit when you apply heat to it? I know you have a stove. I can feel the weight of the fucking thing. And I lend him my walking poles, because he doesn't have any walking poles, because they're not heavy enough to bother packing. And we hike him out. We hike him the sort of 8-9 kilometres to safety. And then I'm feeling pleased with myself. I'm feeling happy. So I tweeted about it. I go, oh, I helped an injured walker to safety today, feeling a bit small. Happy face? I don't know. Hashtag, aren't I great? I can't remember exactly what I said. And the BBC saw it and wanted to talk to me about it. They wanted to pick it up. They wanted to do an interview. I say the BBC. The BBC Highlands and Islands Area News website. Agent. But I thought, why not? It'll be an interesting angle for the article I'm writing for the magazine, and me walker mates will see it, and it'll be a laugh. But I thought, we'd go no further than that. So I gave them an interview, and I put them in touch with the guy I'd met, and that was it. And I thought, that would be the end of it. But then the next day was a slow fucking news day, and that shit went viral like the flu. It was ridiculous. At one point, it was the number one trending story on the BBC News website nationally. Comedian saves walker from certain death. It was fucking ridiculous. And then everybody picked it up, like the Mirror Online is going, mock the weak star. Even that's an exaggeration. Mock the weak star in daring mountain rescue. Everybody ran with it, even the Daily Express, although their headline was EU migrant steals backpack from stricken hiker. But still, you know, what else was I supposed to do with that? So, we're walking through the Peak District. We pass an electric fence. And then my wife very sensibly goes, boys, that's an electric fence. Whatever you do, don't touch it. I like to think she was just talking to the kids. Quite possible she was talking to all three of us. And then my elder son, Cosmo, yes, that's right, Cosmo, awesome name, no, fuck you, you're a showbiz wanker. Cosmo says... Cosmo says, I've already touched it. Now, maybe he has. Maybe he's touched it and it just wasn't pulsing at the time. Or maybe he's a fucking liar. I think most likely the latter. Because children lie, don't they? Children are terrible liars, but we can't really get angry at them for that because we lie to them far more. And we tell bigger lies. Oh, the lies we tell children. Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, I'll be proud of you no matter what you do with your life. Oh, the lies! The shit we fill the children's heads with. So Cosmo says I've already touched it, so then Magnus just starts going off like a firework. Well, he's touched it, I should get to touch it. Yeah, but dude, you don't want to touch it, it'll really hurt. But he's touched it. I don't care what he's done, and neither should you. But he's touched it, I'm going to touch it right now. You are not going to touch it, young man, you're going to be very angry, stay away from it. I hate you, this isn't fair, you always say things should be fair, but you're not like this, you said him do. You always let him do things, just because he's bigger than me, it's not fair. This injustice will not stand. And he just pissed and moaned and whined so much that in the end, I just broke. I went, do you know what? Touch it then. Go ahead. See if I care. And straight away, my wife steps in. Are you fucking mental? Darling, what we have right here is a learning opportunity. This is what they call one of them teachable moments. That's what this is. I've told him not to touch that fence repeatedly. He still wants to touch it. He needs to learn that I have his best interests at heart, and the best way for him to learn that is we'd stand here and watch him get electrocuted. That's how we can know. That's how we can know that he can trust me. Is we'd stand here with a smug smile on my face when he gets knocked on his arse by an electric fence because I love him. It might kill him. It probably won't. Not the strongest argument I've ever released into the wild. So it didn't happen in the end, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm going to tell you what we did do. And I'll tell you what, right, because I understand a lot of you probably think I'm being a bit of a hard arse, I'm being a bit of a, you know, mean, evil, old, Machiavellian, draconian dad. But I'm going to take what we did do, and if you nod, I'll take it you agree with my wife. If, however, you laugh at the absurdity of it, I'll take it you agree with me. Because in the end, in order to shut him up, we let him touch another fence that wasn't electric, but we told him that it was. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. See? That was a short-term solution that's going to lead to long-term problems, wouldn't you say? We saved him from being electrocuted for now. That's what happened there. I think I should have stuck to me guns. There should be no confusion over certain things. You know, I remember as a kid being told not to touch certain things, only to then find out later in life, those things, a lot of fun to touch. So that's, you know... That could lead to a very complicated relationship with electric fences. Now, I know I'm slagging, but I love them, you know, and I do. And I miss them when I don't see them. Like, when I was first doing this show, it started off at the Edinburgh Fringe, which is a long run. It's like 3.5 weeks, and that was too long to be away from the kids. So what I did was I rented this shitty 2-bedroom flat in Edinburgh, right? That's not what I asked for. It's not what I paid for. That's the festival where they see you coming, so that's what I fucking got. And I'm in this really quite shitty 2-bedroom flat, and then in the middle of the festival, the kids and my wife came to visit, and they stayed for sort of 9-10 days, and then they left again. And then when they left again, I'm sitting there alone in my shitty 2-bedroom flat, and I'm just thinking, wow, this is like a taster session for divorce. This is a proper little suck it and see I'm having, isn't it? Like a visit from the ghost of Christmas future. It's like, this is what life's going to be like if we ever get caught fucking around. Let this be a lesson to you. And don't get caught. It's a nasty ass ghost. No, I don't want to get divorced. But, well, folks, I don't know how many times you've seen this before. I don't know if you've followed my career up until now. But when I got married, for instance, I wrote some pretty good jokes about that. That wedding yielded some quite funny material. And then we got a cat, me and my wife. And I wrote some pretty good jokes about having a cat. And then we had kids. What do you think I did next? I wrote some fucking good jokes about having kids. And now I just think of divorce. That's a juicy bit of material waiting to happen, don't you think? Wouldn't you like to see my wacky yet honest offbeat take on divorce? I know, I'd be curious. That is a rich seam to mine comedically. Yeah, see, I've known some pretty funny comedians become fucking hilarious after their divorces. And the ironic thing is, my wife loves me that much, she'd do it for me. She would do that. That is the brick I married. She would do that. Ed, I'd miss you, but if you can't think about the right amount, I will fuck your brother. The kids have got to eat. We can make this happen. Say the word. I don't want to get divorced. I love her. She's my best friend. And we still have sex. I know you were worried. We do. We have sex. But I made the mistake the last time we had sex of asking her how it was. That was a stupid thing to do. You don't do that. You don't. Not at this stage in life. Sex becomes one of those things. You don't talk about it. You just do it. Just have sex and after it's like, thank you. I bid you adieu, good lady. Let us never speak of this. It just becomes like anything else, like putting the bins out. Just do it and be quick about it. That is my wife's attitude to both things. Do it, be quick about it, and shut up about it. No, it's the beautiful thing about being married, about being together that long, is you don't even have to talk about it, even beforehand. What'll happen is you'll exchange a look, and it's like, ooh, it's on. It's date night. There'll be a lingering little touch. You'll be fucking passing one the other, and you'll be like, oh, it's happening. It's happening. And it's great. It's great. But my wife will still have to say something. This is the thing. My wife is a very funny woman, and she has to break the sexual tension because she just cannot help herself. So I remember not the last time we had sex, but like about 4 or 5 months ago. So the time before the last time we had sex. I remember we're at home, and whatever it's happened, the look has been exchanged. It's happening. It's on. We're in bed, and I'm moving in, and I'm thinking I'm being all slick, you know, being all Mr. Lover Lover, you know, like a man old enough to think that song is still current. I'm moving in, and as I get closer, she turns, and I swear this is true, she just goes, "Oh, here he comes."
Like, where is that? How's that sexy?
That's not a line of dialogue from 50 Shades of Grey, I'm fairly certain. No one said that.
"Oh, here he comes."
But I did, I asked her the last time. I did, I said, "How was that? What the fuck is wrong with you? How was it for you? How was that?" It's like, you do not ask the most sarcastic woman on the planet how the sex was 15 years after you first had sex. That's not a door you want to open. "How was that?" "Oh my God, it was amazing." "Seriously, darling, you're such a technician." "Honestly, the angels wept." They were that fucking bored. That was a bang-on impression, by the way. That was, I know you don't know my wife, but that was her to a T, that was. The accent wasn't quite right, but everything else. She keeps a bottle of pale ale next to the bed and everything, just to get her through it. Just to take the edge off.
"Here he comes."
No, I don't want to get divorced. Jesus, I spoil the kids enough as it is. Imagine how much I'd spoil them if I was parenting competitively. "What do you mean your mother doesn't let you play PlayStation in the bath?" He's determined to electrocute those kids, isn't he? Because what's the worst thing that can happen if I spoil the kids too much? What, they grow up with an overinflated sense of their own importance. They grow up thinking that they're great, even when they're not. They grow up so used to having everything handed them on a plate that they basically just throw a tantrum as soon as things don't go their way, and they just essentially fail upwards through life, completely unable to cope with any kind of obstacle or any kind of problem. And what will that prepare them for but the office of President of the United States of America? So, yeah. So much for that cautionary tale. Here's the thing, folks. We have to talk about Trump. We have to talk about him. It's in the contract pretty much nowadays. You're a comedian. We have to talk about him, even just for me to tell you that when I was at the Edinburgh Fringe, because it was a long run, because it was like, you know, 3.5 weeks, on Wednesday nights, I had a woman from Glasgow, actually, would come through every Wednesday night, and she would do sign language for the deaf, because sign language for the blind doesn't work. And she was really good. She was really good. I remember the first night she did it as well. It was like, you know, in Edinburgh, they do how it works. It's like an hour-long show with no interval, which is fine for me. But we come off stage, and she's just the first. She's dripping with sweat, and she's doing this. And she looks at me and goes, "Fuck me, you're fast." I said, "You're not the first woman to say that to me." "Regrettably, you are the sweatiest." But she was great, and she was worth her weight in gold, because it adds an extra dimension to the show for everybody, you know? Like, you get to learn what the sign language is for certain things, like chlamydia, which, by the way, is... That's very descriptive, isn't it? That's a very evocative bit of sign language right there. That's like, you could almost feel it burning, can't you? It's just like... You have to do the face. It's very... You've got to use every string. You've got to do your bow. But, and I didn't realise this until the first Wednesday night, and this is how she would upstage me, because it turns out that the British Sign Language for Donald Trump is that. That's fucking beautiful. That's... I'm supposed to write a joke better than that? I don't think so. That's awesome. Deaf people do not dick around when they're naming shit. Fuck, we're supposed to care about your feelings? Fuck you, we're deaf, we got our own problems. everybody's been complaining about this trip, this visit, you know, Donald Trump's state visit. Everybody's complaining, oh, he shouldn't be coming to Britain. He's too divisive. Have you heard what he said about Muslims? Have you heard what he said about Mexicans? Have you heard what he said about women? I think this trip could have been awesome. Donald Trump's trip to the UK would have been fantastic if they just put a British Sign Language interpreter on stage with them at all times. That could have been, that's what they should have done. And we just make sure every question has the word Trump in it as many times as possible. And we just see how long it takes for it to dawn on him. Watching tonight, I've tried to keep it to the most I can, to the best of my ability, as true and honest as I can and still make it funny. And it causes problems in my own life. My in-laws came to see the show at Books and Opera House a few months ago, watched me slag off their oven right to their fucking faces. Before going on to talk about banging their daughter and wanting to divorce her. Oh, that's the perfect combo right there. From your son-in-law, things are awkward now. My own parents came to see the show in Belfast. They made the journey from Dublin up to Belfast to see the show there. My father was not happy with how he was characterised. I don't remember doing that. Of course you don't. You were hammered. Although my mother's exact words were, I thought you let him off very lightly. So I'm happy. And as regards what my wife thinks of the show, she came to see it in Cambridge a few months ago, and I'll let you know her opinion when she's talking to me again. But it's not just comedians. It's not just comedians. Like, when you use your life to entertain people, it's a weird thing. But it's not just comedians who do it. I have a friend who's an author. Christopher Brookmeyer, he's a great author. If you haven't read his stuff, you should. He's very, very good. It's like, but I met him. I hesitate to call him friend. He's someone I know quite well and enjoy the company of. It's like I don't want him watching this DVD and going, oh, he thinks he's my friend. Fuck, no. I have to hire security now. But we met in 1997 at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He was in my audience at the show. He came to me, it was a little room, and I spotted him, I could see every face, and I spotted this guy because he was on the dust jacket of the book I was reading at the time. His first novel, Quite Ugly One Morning, was in my flat in Edinburgh, and I saw him in the audience, and that's quite a cool moment for a fledgling comedian to see somebody whose work you enjoy at your show. So I couldn't help it, I picked on him. I just went, what's your name? And he goes, Chris. Are you Christopher Brookmeyer, the writer? And he goes, yeah. I'm halfway through your book right now. And he goes, I'm halfway through your show right now. So that was that. A bond was forged. A friendship began, I like to think. Now, I want to tell you something interesting about him before we go, right? His main protagonist in most of his books, not all, but his main protagonist is a guy called Jack Parlabane, investigative reporter Jack Parlabane. And like a lot of authors, there are certain parallels between the real person, Christopher Brookmeyer, and the fictional character, Jack Parlabane. They both grew up in urban areas in Scotland. They're both quite left-leaning in their political viewpoint. Before he was an author, Christopher Brookmeyer used to work as a journalist. Jack Parlabane is a journalist. And in real life, this is crucial, in real life, Christopher Brookmeyer is married to an anaesthetist. And in the first book, Jack meets Sarah, an anaesthetist. Not a coincidence. And they get married in the second book, and they stay married until, spoiler alert, 2 books ago. When Jack and Sarah split up. Now, I know what my own wife is like. Can you imagine how Christopher Brookmeyer's wife felt when she read that manuscript? Can you imagine how awkward that conversation must have been? Oh, I see Jack and Sarah are splitting up. That's a bit of a shame. Is it? Did you not see that coming, no? Oh, I thought they seemed very happy together. Yeah, they seemed it. I just felt like Jack was slowly dying inside. Really starting to stagnate as a character. Probably getting a bit boring for the reader, you know. Yeah? Well, maybe if Jack put a bit more fucking effort into the relationship. Maybe if Jack wasn't always busy writing shit all the time, and maybe if he paid more attention to his family, and I don't know, occasionally put trousers on before 1 o'clock in the fucking afternoon. Maybe that'd be better for all concerned. Yeah? Or maybe Jack's just a bit pissed off that Sarah's always bringing her work home with her, bearing in mind her work is putting people to fucking sleep. Oh, I see, it's like that, is it? Oh, Sarah's boring, is she? But let me tell you, Mr. Writer, if Sarah's boring, it's because you fucking made her that way. Yeah, that does work on two levels, doesn't it? Yeah. Why don't you try and make one of your plots do that for a change, you talentless fucking hack? I don't know how the conversation went. I can only imagine. But I can tell you, I was musing on that every night at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, just gone, and I completely forgot how it was I first met the man. And I swear to you, this is true. In the third week of the festival, Christopher Brookmeyer and his wife and their teenage son, seriously, all came to the gig and watched me tear them a new arsehole. So if you've never read a Christopher Brookmeyer book before, I urge you to get the next one, which I have a feeling is going to involve a paedophile comedian called Ed Burr. So enjoy that. I couldn't pick a better night, honestly. It's hot, but you fucking stuck with it. Despite the fact that we have clearly reached the melting temperature of the average Glaswegian some time ago. I'm just staring at a Ouija stew, basically, is what I have in front of me. If it hadn't been so fucking hot for weeks, you'd probably be enjoying the novelty of it. But even that, it's worn off, hasn't it? Like, fuck this. This is fucking... But no, we're not fucking lizards. This is... More dog, I never thought I'd say it, but the sun can fuck off now. I think not a lot of people know about me. I've decided I'm going to retire at 55, and I'm going to retire, and I'm just going to adopt a Scottish accent. I just feel it would suit me when I get old. I'm just going to completely just embody the whole fucking still game aesthetic. That's my plan. On my 55th birthday, as I blow out the candle, I'm just going to go, fucking shite. Just sit in front of the TV, get this piss off. Just think it would suit me. You've been absolutely lovely, ladies and gentlemen. You really have. I'm going on about how spoiled we all are. I'm the worst. I have the best job in the world. And then I still complain when it's not good enough. You know? Like when I'm not doing this, I do a lot of corporate work, private functions, you know, that sort of things, award shows, things like that. And they tend not to be as much fun. Oh, really, Ed? Is your job not fun sometimes? Let us introduce you to the concept of an actual job. And even then, they're usually okay. Bunch of salespeople have hit their targets and they get a jolly of a dinner and then me, they're normally grand. It only really goes wrong when it's sort of the really high-end financial. That's when things tend to go a bit tits. When it's like the proper 0.01%, the investment bankers, the hedge fund managers, there tends to be a sort of feeling in the room of, why is this long-haired pikey yelling at us? It's just, I can't reach them, you know? It's just, I said, hey, you know what it's like when you get your luggage lost by an airline? No, we all travel by private jet, you fucking peasant. The Aga, isn't that in the room the servants go in? So, I decided on the last one of those. It was the last one I was going to do of that ilk, of that demographic, because it just doesn't fly. But I want to tell you what happened, because it was weird. Before I went on, I was in a place, I was in Grosvenor House on Park Lane, and it was all investment bankers and Princess Anne. Princess Anne was in the audience, and she wasn't the poshest person there. And to be fair, they were paying me the price of a very respectable skiing holiday. I can't really complain. And before I went on, they had a thing called a tombstone auction, something I've never seen before or since, but I want to describe it to you. I don't even know why it's called that, but I want to describe it to you, because what it was is every bank occupies a different table, and every table has a button on it. And every time you press that button, you're giving £10,000 to the charity Save the Children, which is Princess Anne's charity. That's why she's there. And there's a running total then of all the how much each bank has given. That's a big screen. There's a big screen at the back of the stage with a running total of how much each one of the banks has given in real time. And they set a timer for 8 minutes, And so it's just a see, there's no prizes, there's no loss, no one's bidding for anything. It's not an auction in the strict sense. It's just how much money can they all be seen to be giving in front of Princess Anne to her charity in 8 minutes. Kind of a buy yourself a knighthood sort of a dealio, right? And so the guy on stage, he's geeing them all on, he's trying to get them all going, come on, let's see you, press your buttons, let's have you now, come along, sir. How come you've given more than them? Yet their bonuses were bigger than yours this year. Come along, let's give some more money, you tight fuckers, let's have you. Come along, we saw you lot roll up in the table this afternoon, you can press your button a time or two, come on, let's have you. Come along, sir, what's wrong, Barclays? You're saving your money for your next fucking court case. Come on, press those buttons. Let's be having you. Come along. That's not enough to Moriarty and Monaco for 2 fucking hours. Come on, press those buttons now, ladies and gentlemen. Come along. Come along. Sir, I've seen you snort more than that off a Prozzi's back. Come on, press those buttons. Let's be having you. Come along. That's not enough to keep a rent boy from going to the tabloids, and you know it, sir. Press those buttons now. Let's see you. And they're all roaring and yelling and screaming and trying to outdo each other and... And the total's going up, and the timer's running down, and then the timer hits zero, and a confetti bomb goes off. And there's a big round of applause for Citibank. Citibank are the winners. They've given £300,000 to the charity. And between them, all these bankers in this function room on Park Lane have given just over £1 million to charity in 8 minutes. And that's quite impressive. Say what you like. That is not to be sniffed at. I had to kind of park it for a second and just go, you know what? There's not a lot of people who can... drop that kind of cash. It's an amazing thing. It is quite an achievement to give that much money to charity in that short a space of time and still look like cunts. That takes commitment. That takes practice. Now, thinking that was one thing, I shouldn't have said it to them. There was no way to open a gig, it really wasn't. But I feel it's a perfectly good way to close this one. Folks, you've been absolutely lovely. I couldn't have asked for more. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Ed Byrne. Cheers. Good night.